are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Thursday, everybody. Only 2 days until Timberwolves basketball returns. The team was back in Minneapolis and on the court for practice on Wednesday. So we have a few Wolves notes to run through from the various practice reports and the media availability that Ryan Saunders and others did on Wednesday. Then today on today's podcast, I'd also like to spend a few minutes discussing D'Angelo Russell's season as a whole this year. Obviously, most of the season spent in Golden State with the Warriors and now two games in Minnesota, especially comparing it to last year's All-Star season that he had in Brooklyn. The consensus is that he hasn't been as good this season. He's been on a bad team. He obviously didn't make the All-Star team this year, et cetera. But is that really true? Has he really had a worse season than he did last year? So we'll dive into the numbers a little bit and talk about that. And then finally, we'll talk about the Wolves' rotation moving forward, given Karl Anthony Towns' wrist injury, all the roster changes we've seen over the past few weeks, some G League assignments that we're going to talk about here in a minute, and what the rotation might look like come Saturday night when the Wolves host the Boston Celtics. Before we get to all that, however, I did want to remind everybody to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, let's talk a little bit about Wolves notes from practice. The first thing and most important thing, which wasn't really a surprise given some of the reporting we'd seen over the break, notably from John Krasinski at The Athletic, is that the Wolves are admitting that Karl Anthony Towns will be sidelined for the next few games. It's being called indefinitely, which is always a really ominous headline. And I guess especially since the Wolves did the questionable thing with Towns for the better part of 5-6 weeks back from mid-December into January. He was questionable every night. They never really announced the timeline. This could be the Wolves just trying to get in front of that and say, we just don't know. And Saunders said it will be multiple games. That was really the only thing he said in media availability. Most of this reported by Chris Hine of the Star Tribune. ESPN had some reporting as well. But basically, multiple games is all we've got. Towns was at practice. He participated. He apparently played in practice, but had a brace on his wrist and didn't use his wrist when he was catching passes from coaches and taking shots. So if it was super serious, he wouldn't be on the court at all. Obviously, if it was really minor, he would have participated more. So it really seems like this is a continuation of what we'd heard earlier. There's inflammation. It's sore. The Wolves are taking it safe. I don't take this as tanking. I'm sure that some people will say that, but it's not like the Wolves were winning with Towns in the lineup. And clearly the Wolves want Towns and Russell to get as many reps as they can together. So I don't think this is tanking. This is probably simply erring on the side of caution. My guess is if the Wolves are in the thick of the playoff race, they probably would do something similar. It may just not be as extensive. Like perhaps, perhaps it's a game or two more than something like that, because sure, it's better if the Wolves get a better draft pick, and but more importantly, there's no sense in risking further injury. We don't know what the injury is, but if there's inflammation, if the tendons are, if there's something there that could get worse, then the Wolves obviously are going to play it safe. They're already, I think, the third worst, maybe fourth worst record in the league. So it's not like they need to tank all that hard. So who knows when he'll be back. Obviously, he won't be on the court on Saturday, which is disappointing. That'll be a really tough game against the Celtics with no Karl Anthony Towns. Remember, the Wolves lost at home to the Charlotte Hornets last Wednesday, right before the break, with no Towns and with D'Angelo Russell on the court. So we'll see how the Wolves handle that moving forward. But that'll certainly be something to keep an eye on. Also, the Wolves made a number of G League assignments public. They had press releases that went out on Wednesday. Three guys were assigned to the G League. All three were guys that were acquired recently via trade. So the big trade, the 12 player trade between four teams, the Nuggets, Hawks, Rockets, and Wolves. One of the pieces that came back from Denver was Jared Vanderbilt. Right after the trade, we talked a little bit about him as actually a potentially intriguing piece of this trade. The Wolves basically swapped Kade Bates-Diop, who the Nuggets felt they could plug into the fringe of the rotation for the playoff race this year. And he's 24, I believe. The Wolves got back a 20-year-old. Jared Vanderbilt essentially plays the same position and a lot more athletic, a lot more dynamic, a lot higher upside, but certainly not ready to contribute every day. Interestingly, he was assigned to the G League on Wednesday, and he had been up for the first few games. He appeared in two of his first three or four games, I guess, with the Wolves, two of his first four, maybe. Or no, I guess they've only been on the team for three. So two of the first three games, once was in garbage time, once was out of desperation. The Wolves couldn't rebound the ball in the game against Charlotte. So Vanderbilt got 4 minutes and got to the free throw line, missed a corner three, and had a rough plus-minus stint, but was aggressive and showed some of that athleticism. Interesting that to me that he's in the G League, given that the Wolves are without Karl-Anthony Towns, and we'll talk later about the rotation. There aren't that many big guys in the rotation right now, but the Wolves are identifying that he needs minutes, which makes sense. And so rather than play 10, 12 minutes a game at best in the NBA, go play 30 a game in the G League for a little while at least. So he was assigned to the G League, and then also Jacob Evans III and Omari Spellman, who were both acquired in the Golden State trade along with D'Angelo Russell that sent Andrew Wiggins to the Warriors. They were also both assigned to the G League. Both guys appeared in the last Iowa game before the NBA All-Star break as well. Spellman, we talked about it a little bit in a G League snapshot, I think on Monday of this week. Spellman did get some minutes and played really well. Evans didn't play quite as much, but I would expect Spellman to get plenty of run. He hasn't done much G League time, as he was the 30th pick of the first round a couple years ago and played his rookie year in Atlanta, last year in Golden State. There's some upside there, and that's another interesting one to me, that the Wolves aren't going to give him some minutes at the four or the five behind Juancho Hernan Gomez, or potentially even some significant minutes at the five, given the dearth of depth at that position suddenly for the Wolves after trading Gorgui Dieng and seeing Karl-Anthony Towns out due to injury. So all three of those guys are going to be in Iowa. All three of those guys are going to get some run, and that'll be really good for them to at least get some minutes under their belt. It does thin out the Wolves roster a little bit, which perhaps that says something about Jake Lehman's potential availability. I don't know. I didn't see any comments about him in the media availability following practice on Wednesday. So we'll have to keep an eye on whether or not he's available on Saturday. But that's pure speculation. And so we'll talk a little bit more about the rotation in the final segment of today's episode, for sure. All right, next up, we are going to talk a little bit about D'Angelo Russell specifically and what his season has looked like overall this year, especially compared to last year. In Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell, the Wolves have a couple of players who were All-Stars last year as young players. I think each of their fourth season in the league, actually, last year. Towns is a two-time All-Star, didn't make it this year, mostly because of games missed in the first half. Russell made it last year for a Brooklyn Nets team that surprised and made the playoffs. It really surpassed expectations. And this year, both have been much maligned. Both were the best player on bad teams. The Warriors and Wolves were the two worst teams in the West for the first half of the season up until the trade deadline, and obviously now too. And so there's a lot of similarities there. Towns' numbers have been more consistent and more gaudy basically since day one. He won Rookie of the Year. D'Angelo Russell had more of a slow introduction to he still started like half the games for the LA Lakers as a rookie, but played a little bit out of position and played on some weird teams, and ultimately was traded to the Nets. And then last offseason, of course, was planning to come to Minnesota. The Warriors offered him a max deal, went to Golden State, knew he was going to be traded. There's been a lot said about his attitude, his effort, his defense. All things that you hear about Towns, although effort's usually not one of them. When it comes to defense, it is. And so there's a lot of skepticism related to the fit with those two guys. We don't need to rehash all that. I think a lot of it's unfair. I think it's just there's a lot of traditional media chatter out there about these two basically 24-year-olds, Russell's about to turn 24, who are best friends, who have basically pouted until they got on the same team together, is the theory. Neither plays defense, et cetera, et cetera. No matter how great of a fit they might be on offense, it's not going to work out. I've submitted on this podcast previously that I think the fit will work to an extent. I certainly don't think this roster is certainly not a championship contending roster, not close, and likely not a playoff contending roster even next year. However, there will be changes between now and next year. And I also think there's a lot to be said for some of these guys, especially like a Malik Beasley, getting some opportunity and running with it. All you need is a little bit of improvement there, a mini leap from Russell and or Towns, a little bit of improved defense. And this team really should be, with the amount of shooting they've got now, it should be a top 10 offensive team in the league. The problem is defense. You just got to be basically in that middle range defensively. And this team could turn into a playoff team relatively easily. If you're even more dynamic on offense than expected if they add a couple of veteran pieces this offseason, improve the shooting even a little bit more, then things really fall into place. What I think is getting lost in the shuffle is that Russell hasn't always been this awful, awful defensive player that everybody just assumes that he's been, because that's the narrative, and Golden State was more than happy to kind of stoke that fire through the media over the past few weeks to try and make their trade look better. I think the short answer is yes, he's been really bad defensively this year, as has Karl Anthony Towns. There's really no two ways about it. You can be a casual fan, you can watch, you can see the effort hasn't been 100% there for either guy. Both players, Russell especially, won't fight through screens consistently. Towns isn't always in the right position on rotations down low. And he often, we talked about this a couple of times now over the past week or so, he'll often be a beat late on rotating to block a shot, and he'll just kind of give it the cursory, hey, I tried to block the shot, and then he's out of position. He doesn't block the shot, he's out of the position for the rebound, and a lot of times the opposing team will you know, get a second chance basket because Towns is out of position. However, going back to Russell, if you look at his numbers from last year to this year, across the board, he's actually had, you could argue he's had a better season this year, even though his team has been much worse. The only thing that's really, and I'm going to start with the negative first, the defense has been really, really bad. A lot of that's to do with the team and the players he's surrounded with in Golden State. Obviously, with Steph Curry being out for the majority of the year, Draymond Green even missing some time, but, you know, being a little bit of a different player without the offensive stars around him. Obviously, no Klay Thompson, no Andre Iguodala, no Kevin Durant, all that stuff in Golden State this year. D'Angelo Russell's legitimately been the 129th best, if you will, player out of 131 guards. They're listed on ESPN as shooting guards, so Russell, I think, is miscast a little bit here because he has played a lot of point guard this year. But listed among shooting guards, he's 129th out of 131 in terms of defensive real plus minus on ESPN's website, based on their stat, which is actually a pretty comprehensive and generally well-respected stat when it comes to individual defensive numbers, which are always a bit noisy, and there's always some skepticism there. But I mean, you look at the players that are the best, and you kind of expect it. You know, Kent Bazemore's in there, Josh Richardson are among the best players. However, there's also some other noise. I don't think anybody would say James Harden's legitimately the 10th best defensive shooting guard in the league, or that Alex Caruso is the best, which are also things that the stat says. So there can be a little bit of doubt cast there. That said, if we want to take it into consideration, look at the previous season. I mean, look at last year in Brooklyn. D'Angelo Russell last season actually ranked 52nd. Out of 99 shooting guards that were ranked last year with a minus 0.57 defensive real plus minus. That's not bad. That's solidly middle of the pack for a team that was a pretty good defensive team. And again, scheme matters, and there's, again, some noise involved with these individual defensive metrics. But last year, for a full season, remember, we're only two-thirds of the way through the season games-wise this year. Through a full season, that stat was led by Paul George, Danny Green, Andre Iguodala were the top three. Victor Oladipo is 7. I mean, it all makes sense. Those are guys that should be, if you ask who are the best defensive wings, George, Green, Iguodala would all come up in your mind. If you look at, you know, small forwards, same thing. Thabo Sefolosha, obviously he didn't play a whole lot last year and isn't playing a whole lot this year. Kyle Anderson, Jimmy Butler. I mean, there's a bunch of guys who it makes sense that they're ranked there. So this metric makes sense, and I like it a lot. And I think it's important to note that that's really the only area that Russell's gotten measurably worse from last year to this year would be defensively. There's been a lot said about that. Most recently, Tim Kawakami at The Athletic covers the Warriors, also I believe the 49ers, for The Athletic in the Bay Area. And he noted that the Warriors saw from day one that there was a little bit less defensive effort than they even expected, which a lot of that had to do with Russell not feeling the Warriors were truly committed to him. He figured they were going to flip him. The Warriors weren't in turn truly committed to Russell. It doesn't excuse Russell's effort and lack of effort on the defensive end of the floor, but it also kind of explains a little bit why that number looks like it does and why his defense appeared to be so much worse. Because the effort just wasn't as much there. Also surrounded by worse players than he was in Brooklyn with all the injuries that the Warriors underwent this year, all the young players, all the G League type guys that he played with, you know, and even guys like Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks and wings who have since been traded that aren't great defenders either. And that doesn't help. So there's again, there's lots of factors to consider there, but that's really the only area that Russell's been measurably worse this season. And it's also something that he hasn't always been just an atrocious defender. We've talked about Towns in the past. He's last among centers in defensive real plus minus this year, according to ESPN. So if the Wolves have two bottom three guys at their respective positions in defensive real plus minus, that should be an issue. However, if you buy in that there's going to be a change in effort, there's going to be improved scheming with better athletes on the team overall, with David Vanterpool, the associate head coach, acting as the defensive coordinator, and helping to scheme up some new defenses to play to the Wolves' strengths. We talked about Towns' issue covering the pick and roll the other day. You can certainly see this defense improving a little bit over time. Again, to this point in the season, the Wolves are 17th in defensive rating. Not that bad. Trading Robert Covington is going to hurt that quite a bit. But there also could be some room for improvement. And if we see any really over the end of the season, I think it's important to remember where the Wolves ranked at the All-Star break in defensive rating. What does that look like at the end of the year? It's going to be skewed a bit depending on how long Towns is out. But that's something to keep an eye on. One final note related to Russell. I think if you compare his last season to this season, it's not apples to apples because of the roster talent he was surrounded with, and Golden State plays very differently than Brooklyn. But across the board, he's pretty much been better offensively. His shooting percentages are pretty much all up. He's shooting a career best 37.9% from beyond the arc. That's up from 36.9% last year, so a full percentage point. Shooting a career best at the free throw line, just a hair under 80%. He's also shooting more threes. He's shooting a career high. His three-point rate is over 50%, meaning more than half of his shot attempts are coming from beyond the arc, which is a positive thing. And that's a new development for him. It's the first time in his career that that's happened. Also, very notably, his free throw rate is up. One of the knocks on Russell is he doesn't get to the free throw line. He doesn't get to the rim. He doesn't get fouled, and therefore is a pretty limited offensive player when it comes to shooting mid-range jumpers, getting through pick and rolls, and just popping up for open mid-range shots, and then also hitting some threes. Last year, his free throw rate was a 0.135. That means that for every field goal he attempted from the floor, he only attempted 0.135 free throws, which is a really poor mark. This year, that's up to 0.227. It's a career high. It's really not all that close. His second year in the league, he was at 0.217. But he's attempting far more free throws per game than he ever has in his career. If you want to look at it in a little bit more tangible, easy to digest number, last year he was attempting 2.5 free throws a game. This year that's up to 4.3 free throws per game. That's a full, 1.8 free throws more per game. And if you're shooting them at an 80% clip, that's effectively between 1.5 and 2 points extra per game that he's scoring simply by getting to the free throw line. And that matters. Certainly he's 23. So the fact that he's understanding how to get to the free throw line more often, perhaps he's getting more calls because of his status in the league, not sure. Those things are all positive, and that's going to matter in the long run for him. It's important to note that as it has been one of his knocks. Also, with his usage rate increasing on a bad Golden State team as really the only option, his turnover rate has actually decreased. It's at a career low this year at 13%. Last year was a previous career low at 13.6%. So as he's grown in the league, even though he's gotten more ball handling responsibilities, he has seen his usage rate increase and his turnover rate decrease. Again, that matters. That's important. He was shooting the ball a ton in Golden State, and we also have seen his assist rate go down a little bit from last year in Brooklyn. But again, part of that was due to lack of talent in Golden State and all the things he was asked to do by Steve Kerr and by the Warriors. But again, encouraging all those things, the free throw rate increasing along with the usage rate increasing and the turnovers going down shows that he's getting a better understanding for the game and growing as a professional. And that's all really important. The only significant, notable decrease in his rate-based statistics are his rebounding percentage, which isn't all that significant of a decrease. It's down from 6.8% last year to 6.1% so far this year. And remember, he's played in less than half as many games so far this year as he did last year. So all these numbers are going to adjust a little bit. But it's not like a significantly worse rebounding percentage. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. Moving forward, what he's able to do on the glass, but certainly not the most important thing that in on the list of things that the Wolves are going to ask Russell to do, that's not number one, certainly. So all that to say, I think that Russell's gotten a little bit of a bad rap based on his performance this year. It'll be interesting to see what that looks like here moving forward. All right, last segment, I want to talk a little bit about the Wolves' rotation and what that could look like here for the balance of the season. We talked at the top of the show about how the Wolves have assigned a few guys to the G League, three guys, I guess, to be precise. And I want to talk briefly about what the rotation could look like moving forward, especially without Towns available for the next multiple games. We don't know how many, but due to his injury. In the final game before the All-Star break against the Charlotte Hornets, we saw James Johnson start at center in Towns' stead. Of course, James Johnson is not actually a center, and he is, what, 6'7"? And the Wolves just simply decided to go with their add another guy who could handle the ball, add a guy who could rebound and defend well for his size to the lineup. But is that a long-term solution? I mean, obviously not long-term, but is that what the Wolves will do moving forward? Well, the only true big men on this roster at this point, with Towns injured and Spellman in the G League, are Naz Reid, who's really 6'9", and Juancho Hernan Gomez, who's 6'9". Vanderbilt's in the G League as well. So that means that Hernan Gomez already was going to be the starting power forward, but there's not any true power forward depth behind him outside of James Johnson, who also then was playing center last game. So the Wolves, their backup minutes at the four last time out, they would play Reid at center, and then Johnson played some four, Hernan Gomez played some four, and that was basically it. Those were the three guys. Vanderbilt saw a few minutes. Besides that, it's all wings and guards on this team. That's what we're going to see moving forward. I hope that Naz Reid gets some minutes starting, and if the Wolves want to manipulate that based on matchups, I think that's fine. But Naz Reid needs to get some run as a starter for this team, so the Wolves can really try and identify, is he a good fit behind Towns as a backup moving forward? Could he be a fit as a backup at the four as well behind Hernan Gomez moving forward? Could the Wolves get away with starting him at power forward some next year if Hernan Gomez leaves in restricted free agency? I think that's unlikely. I think there'd be too many issues on the glass and defensively with both Reid and Towns on the floor at the same time, but maybe that could work depending on what happens the rest of the season. So all those are questions that need to be answered. I think it also speaks a little bit to potentially Jake Lehman's health. And again, I'm speculating here because there hasn't been anything said other than he'd been practicing for 2 to 3 weeks prior to the All-Star break. He's been on the bench. He's been, during games more recently, and looks like he's been close to returning. But if the Wolves are sending three guys to the G League, is there a chance that Lehman's back maybe even this Saturday or very soon? And if he is, he's going to get some minutes at the four. The Wolves intended all along for him to get some backup minutes at the four this season, initially behind Robert Covington, and that obviously didn't work out due to his injury. But he's an important part of what the Wolves are trying to do. He's a good cutter and a good shooter and a solid defender. All those things are going to help the Wolves' rotation and allow them to do more things like play James Johnson at the five if they want to, or slide Lehman to the three if they want to, or play him next to Juancho Hernan Gomez if they want to. So we'll see if Lehman comes back as well. Besides that, we're going to get heavy doses of outside of Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie, who we're used to. Malik Beasley is going to get a lot of minutes. Alan Crabb will get bench minutes. Jordan McLaughlin's the backup point guard for the foreseeable future. At some point, they'll have to make a decision on a contract for the rest of the year for him, or sign a veteran or something to help soak up some of those minutes. But this rotation, it's going to have to be a little bit creative, and it's not going to put the Wolves in a spot to win very many games without Towns. I'm interested to see what the Wolves do with the five. It'll give us a good glimpse about what they really think of Naz Reid and his upside and what he could be moving forward. Because as important as it is to get James Johnson some run with this team, I think it would have been more important to see him next to Karl-Anthony Towns and see him mentor Karl-Anthony Towns, see him play defense next to Towns, see him anchor the defense in a way from the wing. Now, miscast as a center, I don't think that gives us much enough James Johnson. I think you save some of those minutes. He's, I think, the oldest guy on the team now. Give him some rest till Towns comes back. Have him just play his typical 20 to 24 minutes a game on the wing. Don't start him and play him 32 minutes at center like they did against Charlotte. I think those minutes need to go to Naz Reid, and the Wolves need to see what that fit looks like moving forward. But that'll be something to keep an eye on. Also, Jalen Noel, he was on the bench the other day for the Wolves and didn't play. I'd like to see him get some minutes on the wing, perhaps at the expense of somebody like Alan Crabb moving forward. The Wolves know what he is, and should be able to make a determination on whether or not they want to bring him back in the offseason, obviously at a much reduced salary. He's expiring either way. I guess there's always the chance they even buy him out before March 1st. There obviously is only like a week left to do that, but that's always a possibility too. I think it's unlikely, but I think it's important to see Noel and see Keelan Martin as well, who is, of course, on a two-way deal, and perhaps we'll see some more run here soon as well. So it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out related to the rotation, especially at the five and to a lesser extent at the four, and what the Wolves do there moving forward. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. There's only one more episode before the Wolves return to action on Saturday against Boston. Our Friday show will preview that matchup, talk a little bit about the Celtics season so far and how the Wolves without Karl-Anthony Towns might match up. We'll also update any news that we might get on somebody like a Jake Lehman, who perhaps could play on Saturday, which would be, I guess at this point that qualifies as exciting for a Wolves team that has just been awful for the past almost 3 months. So we'll talk a little bit about that on Friday as well. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.